Hello, you're listening to Cam FM 97.2. This is Jack Winstanley here, and today I'm joined by Michael Crick, current political correspondent for Channel 4 News. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
So I just wanted to ask you a few quick questions after you've spoken at the Cambridge Union this afternoon. And the first one I wanted to start with, I was just wondering what the difference was between working for Channel 4, Panorama and Newsnight. Was there a difference in journalistic approach, perhaps, and which one did you prefer?
I think journalists are a bit like runners. The news guys, the people who do a minute 30 on the 6 o'clock or the 10 o'clock news, they're a bit like sprinters. You know, they're the sort of 100-metre, 200-metre chaps. And then there are middle-distance television journalists, people who work for Newsnight and Channel 4 News, and we're the equivalent of sort of 400, 800, 1500 metres guys. And then there are journalists who work on programmes like Panorama or Dispatches and often work on subjects for months and months and months, sometimes years. And they're a bit like marathon men. And I suppose people who do a sort of 10-part documentary series, they're sort of people, the extraordinary people who do 10 marathons in 10 days. And the skills involved are very different. And there are not many television journalists who can do the range. And my preferred range is middle distance. In other words, Channel 4 News and Newsnight. When I worked on Channel 4 News in the 80s as a reporter for the first time, the average length of our film reports was about 5 minutes. We're now down to 3 minutes. When I was on Newsnight, they used to allow me 5 or 6 minutes most nights. Now, since I left there, the length of Newsnight items has reduced. But you manage to say a lot more than purely give the day's events. In a minute 30, it's difficult to do any more than the Prime Minister said this today and the Leader of the Opposition said that, and tomorrow or on Wednesday there'll be a meeting to sort this out. In a minute 30, that's really all you can do. If you've got 3 minutes, it does give you the opportunity to explain some of the background, to do a bit of an analysis, to give a slightly different take on it. And if you've got 5 minutes or 6 minutes, you can do even more than that. And I prefer the middle distance. And it means that you're sacrificing an audience, because the news programmes get much bigger audiences than the analytical news programmes like Newsnight and Channel 4. But it's more fun to do the kind of things that I get to do on Newsnight and Channel 4 News, and I've been working on those programmes for nearly all my television career. I did have 2 years on Panorama, where I'd spend 3 months working on one item, and if I'm being honest about it, I hated that. 3 months on one item, there was a lot of worry and anxiety. It was difficult to sleep. You'd be worrying about what you're going to do tomorrow, and whether you're going to be able to get this interview, and whether somebody else would get there first. I much prefer the quick turnaround, the daily news, or if I'm not doing it that day, at least only taking a few days, spending a few days on it. That is my preferred distance. But other journalists prefer to the long form. They're the marathon men, and there are others, or women, and there are the sprinters who do much shorter items, or indeed do the live news, which I do live stuff a lot at 7 o'clock, but some people, of course, doing live reports all day long.
Thank you. What would you say is the biggest event or flashpoint of your career as a journalist so far? So have you got a particularly big scoop that you're particularly proud of, or is there something that just flashed up and you would say, if I could pick one moment in my career that I was kind of not centre of attention, should we say, but there was just the biggest point for you, what would it be?
I don't think there is a particular scoop you can associate with me. People often ask me this question, and my mind freezes, and I can't think of anything. I mean, there are certain stories that I'm associated with, I suppose, journalistically. I wrote a book about a chap called Geoffrey Archer, who, of course, is still a pretty successful, well-known novelist, but at that time was a conservative politician. And I made a Panorama programme about him as well. That is one of the things that I've been associated with. 30 years ago, I did a lot of work on a Trotskyist group that had infiltrated the Labour Party called the Militant Tendency. Everybody's forgotten about them now, but at the time, they were quite important. And I suppose it was that subject that really got me into investigative journalism, in the sense of digging away and getting the real story behind what was going on. But political journalism in the early 1980s was a lot less aggressive, a lot less questioning, a lot more deferential. And nobody really had looked at this group militant and asked who they are and find out, you know, that really they were trying to infiltrate the Labour Party for their own ends. And there was a lot of secrecy involved. And I had really the feel almost to myself at that stage. It wouldn't happen now. If militant was to arise now, there would be lots and lots of journalists who were digging away and looking at them. So there's that. There's the, the Pledgate story I did a couple of years ago caused quite a stir, and it's still that story is still rumbling on. I suppose I'm also quite well known for covering election campaigns, which are always great fun. I was particularly by-elections. I like to go there and put the politicians on the spot. I suppose throughout my career, I've always had a premium on telling the world something new, or doing a different angle on it, or a different take, or different way of going about things, of challenging people in power. I mean, I think it's the job of journalists to challenge people in power. We are one of the checks and... I mean, it sounds pompous, I know, but we are one of the important checks and balances in a free society. A free press is there to hold people in power, in all senses, to account. We only do it in a small way, and a lot of the time we're unsuccessful. But if we weren't there, people in power would get away with a lot more than they do get away with. We're not the only people holding them to account. Obviously, the law does, and obviously Parliament does. But a free press is does to a small degree. And, you know, there are people who say, well, how would this look if it was on the front page of... if it was in Private Eye, or if it was on Channel 4 News or on Newsnight, before they act. And maybe the fact that we might be following them, pursuing them, asking them questions may occasionally deter people. I think the other thing I've always liked doing is enjoying my job, and I think people my sense of fun in pursuing the stories I do. Some of them are too serious to have fun about, but a lot of the time one can enjoy doing it, particularly if you're doing it in a different manner from the rest. I've tried to keep away from the rest of the pack. I take the view that if all the rest of the journalistic community think one thing, then it's well worth exploring the opposite of what they all think. And you might find out that actually you're right in the end. It's quite a good way to live, to pursue the opposite line to everybody else.
And you mentioned there that you cover quite a lot of election campaigns, and this would be the final question just to wrap up. I just wanted a quick opinion on how big a threat you think UKIP are and how the general election will pan out next year, from your point of view.
UKIP are, have now become a serious force in British politics. They're not just the fourth party in British politics, arguably they're the third party in British politics. And at the moment, in the last few months, you could argue that they're the second party in British politics, in that they are making the political weather right now. Much more than the official opposition, the Labour Party. They won the European elections, they won the Clacton by-election, they're about to win another by-election. They're way ahead of the Liberal Democrats in the polls. But their success isn't really in votes and seats and councillors and all of that. The real success of UKIP has been in pulling British politics in their direction. So now the Conservatives and Labour and Liberal Democrats are all having to respond and are all having to modify their policies and generally move to the right on things like Europe and immigration, the two big UKIP policies. And that's the measure of their success. And for a long time people have said, oh, there'll be a flash in the pan, they'll go away, there'll be some scandal. But, you know, they've now been in this position for a couple of years. They've shown themselves to be pretty resilient. You can easily see them winning half a dozen, maybe a dozen seats at the general election. And if the distribution of seats amongst all the other parties is right, they could actually hold something of the balance of power. They're not going to go away. Clearly, if we... Or at least they're not going to go away in the immediate future, in my view. If we do end up with a referendum on Europe and decide one way or another to go in and out, that might deflate the UKIP balloon to a degree. The challenge for them now is to turn themselves into a small party and to catch up in terms of the infrastructure and the people. And Farage's problem is that he's got very few good people around him. I think there's been an element of Farage of keeping away good people because he sees them as a bit of a threat. I think he's realised the trouble is he can't do it all on his own, and he's got to encourage good people around him. But UKIP are finding it very hard to suddenly cope with all this growth and to vet all the candidates and deal with all the money and work out how you're going to devote the resources here and there and everywhere. But I think it's the most interesting development in British politics in the time I've been a journalist. Nigel Farage is not going to be Prime Minister, but certainly I think UKIP will carry on causing a lot of disruption and worry for the other parties for several years.
So, Michael Crick on CamFM, thank you very much.
Thank you.